When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
It was a small microcosm for the season as a whole, with Max Verstappen taking a record-setting 15th victory in 2022 at Yas Marina that never seemed in any doubt. Welcome to the episode 249 of Grid Talk. Today we're here to discuss the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. My name is Owen Medford, and joining me we have Sophia Richmond from Everything F1.
Hi.
Philip Matthew, co-host of the Grip Strip podcast.
Hello.
And Josh Huffine, the other co-host of the Grip Strip podcast. Before we get into the show... Sorry. I completely talked over you there. Sorry. But first, if you enjoy this podcast, we would love it if you could take five to leave us a five-star review rating on Spotify or a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you do, you'll automatically go into our monthly draw to win a Grid Talk t-shirt from our champion range of merch. And if you're one of the 72% of people who aren't yet subscribed to the channel, please consider helping us out with a like and subscribe. So, as I said earlier, Max Verstappen took a pretty convincing victory over Charles Leclerc. Josh, just to get obviously as a sort of first time guest on the show, you know, kind of what are your thoughts about Max Verstappen's win there? Because it kind of looks like it was going to happen no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was in any doubt, really. You know, it was a thoroughly dominating win throughout, and you know, like you said, it's a very microcosm of the season because you know, 15 wins on the year, you know, he really didn't, you know. Didn't have to really risk anything in this one, but they went with a one-stop strategy, being able to manage his tires throughout the entire race. So not really a victory that was really in any doubt, and certainly had the pace throughout the you know entire weekend to be able to do it, and even was able to skip the first practice just to let somebody else drive and you know be able to win the pole and have a good qualifying effort there, led to certainly a dominating win there for sure.
Yeah, 100%. That's a big thing. I mean, he lost an hour worth of practice time, and it didn't matter whatsoever. you know, he just completely pulled away from Charles Leclerc in second place, who actually kind of pulled a blinder, Philip, to get into that second place. Ferrari finally, it only took them a year working out how to set up a strategy.
Well, at least they figured it out at the last, and they finally came good. The Ferraris actually had decent pace too this weekend. They've always had the pace in qualifying really for most of the year, most of the year, and then this weekend definitely. And then, you know, Charles was not feeling great about the choice to go to one stop, but in the end it was the right strategy because of the track that they're at. I mean, honestly, you're gonna get caught up in traffic, and then even if you're not caught up in traffic, being able to really make a move is virtually, you know, it's not easy if at all, unless you're gonna barge through somebody or do some questionable stuff. So I mean, Leclerc in the end held his was calm, cool, collected, which is something he probably needed earlier in the year when he was still somewhat in the mix with the other guy. And he did what he had to do, get second in the world championship. Ferrari second in the constructors. So a great, in the end, by the numbers, it shows a great year for Ferrari. Once you dig into it, though, you see a lot of the warts that exist there and a lot of missed opportunities that Ferrari definitely had in 2022. It doesn't really matter. They weren't going to beat Verstappen. The Red Bull was a better car, but you know, they could have maximized more race results, more wins, and you know, Verstappen would have won what, 12, 13 races or maybe or 11 or whatever, and he still would have had a world championship. But good on Charles Leclerc getting that podium for Ferrari. locking up that second in constructors and second in the drivers. So great result for him in his career moving on to next year.
Yeah, 100%. I think you make an excellent point that Ferrari might be second in the constructors relatively convincingly at the end. I think it doesn't, you have to look at how far away they are from Ferrari to just see how bad the season has been. They had everything going for them and they threw it away. Now, speaking of sort of having everything going for you and kind of throwing it away, it wasn't really his fault, but Sergio Perez, he unfortunately, Sophia, could not get, he could not outscore Charles Leclerc. And, you know, it's going to hate, people are going to get pain to say that, going to get pain to hear this be said, but Max Verstappen letting him through in Brazil wouldn't have mattered, would it?
No, definitely not. I think you'd still been probably about 2 points out or 1 point out. It just wasn't the race, and like the amount of slating that Max got, the amount of everything outside of the actual racing situation just got way out of hand for it. But Checo, he did well. He was like, I think 1.3 seconds off from Charles towards the last lap. He defended and had some good races, some good overtaking throughout the race, but it just wasn't his race. And yeah, people are going to talk about Brazil and all that, but like Sky have said, and like we've just said, like it wouldn't have made a difference no matter what for if Perez was to get the second place in the Drivers' Championship. It just wasn't worth it. It wasn't even possible. But I mean, there was other times that Perez could have gotten more points that was needed, more so early on in the season. But overall as well, Red Bull finally winning the Constructors as well since, 8 years now? But definitely going forward as well. I think we'll see a lot more from Perez, a bit more in this new season. And I think communication within the drivers and the teams is definitely going to be more crucial this new season going forward.
Yeah, 100%. Now we move on to Carlos Sainz, Josh, who is started fourth, finished fourth. Would you say he kind of got hamstrung by the strategy a little bit, or do you reckon that was the kind of the best that they could do and helped for, you know, and kind of Sainz had to play that team game to facilitate Leclerc's second place?
Yeah, I think maybe it was just more of him playing that team teammate role there. I think you could have said that maybe the strategy could have been better and maybe could have been finished higher than fourth place, possibly get a podium, interrupt the Red Bull, sandwich there between him and Leclerc and Verstappen. But, you know, I think, for Sainz, 21 laps, younger tires in the final 19 laps, definitely could have been better for him. But, I think Carlos Sainz did the best he could being a teammate for Leclerc, and certainly helps Leclerc get that second place in the championship for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one of those things. It's just sometimes the game you have to play. Now we move on to George Russell, who was having a sort of a bit of a ding dong with his teammate up until the last few laps, Phil. But it's kind of, I don't know. Would you say that's a disappointing result for George Russell, or is this kind of, just an issue that they had at this weekend for pace?
I mean, coming off of the best weekend he's had in his entire Formula One career, it seems like a disappointment, but they didn't have the pace. I mean, in FP1, when you had half the grid with young drivers, eight out of 20 or something, or people that are pseudo young drivers, like how Fred will be on Tuesday, like Bobby Kubica or whatever, who stopped being a young driver about a decade and a half ago. But they had pace in the daylight when there was really nobody out there. But then once you got to reality, car, the same issues that they've had all year, not having great straight line pace was a big issue for them. And it came out in qualifying. They had good pace in twistier sections. The third sector is where Max really made up a lot of time. at the end of the day, it was not a great weekend for Mercedes. I mean, Toto came out yesterday and said, well, today's National Toilet Day, somebody told me, and we need to throw this qualifying session in the toilet. And then we should throw this race in the toilet too. This and take the W13 and all the any parts that aren't going to be used for the W14 and take it in a trash bin and torch it, because it's one of the crappiest cars ever made that somehow or another finished third in a Constructors' Championship. It did nothing really, really, it barely did anything well. And the fact that George Russell, I give credit to him in that he's used to driving bad cars his whole entire Formula One career. So the fact that he's driving this bad car didn't bother him anywhere near as much as his much more experienced and accomplished teammate. So it's best of what he could do. They had pace early, very, very early in the race. They seemed to have a little bit of pace, but then it went away from them. Lewis's, you know, issues initially and then getting held up. And it's a disappointment after coming off your first win, but he finished. He's literally only the second person who legitimately beat Lewis Hamilton so in a season, so credit to him. I mean, we heard about Fred Alonso and the people that have beat him, and I heard one particular person that made me laugh. So the fact is, at least Lewis can say he's been beat by somewhat legitimate drivers in his career. So
yeah, I think that's a big thing to say, is that, you know, George Russell has really proved himself, whatever you may say, you know, however you want to detract from him. He has beaten Lewis Hamilton, which is, you know, a similar achievement to some bloke from Minardi beating a two-time world champion. So we move on to Lando Norris. Best of the rest in the race and best of the rest in the world championship. To be fair, that I would say that you know, that's a pretty big achievement from Lando Norris to get that seventh place in the World Championship by getting a sixth place here. But it wasn't enough to enable McLaren to get ahead of Alpine. There we go. I thought of the teams. just not quite there, was he, unfortunately?
No, I mean, to be fair, he has carried McLaren this entire season off his back. Like, he deserved everything that he has achieved so far this season. I think with how situation with Daniel throughout the season, not getting into final qualifying, never really being that far into the points, and then you have Lando just literally out driving him this entire season, this is the proof. Like, it'll be interesting looking at the numbers now this offseason, because I'm going to be completely bored, and seeing how much of the points ratio is actually going to be to Lando, because I'm going to say it's going to be probably like a 2-1 or even a 3-1 to Daniel. But seven of the constructors, I think that's his highest he's ever been as well in his career. So, which is a great feat to have. It's going to be interesting in the new season with Piastri coming over. Obviously, Lando will need to take even a bigger lead in the McLaren for the new season, but we'll definitely see how it goes. But he was deserving. I feel like he could have finished a lot higher, probably helped, and like Daniel could have helped a little bit more in the Constructors' Championship fight, because obviously that's more of the bigger battle for them compared to the Drivers' Championship.
Yeah, I believe it's probably about 3.5 to 4 to 1 ratio of Lando to Ricciardo's point scoring efforts, which is, as we, I mean, we've said it numerous times before now, but, you know, really to put the nail in the coffin, it's an awful season for Ricciardo. And unfortunately, it has kind of probably precipitated his return to a reserve driver role, which is, I'd say, worse than being at Hispania or HRT, whichever he was driving through at that point, I can't remember what name they had. Now, speaking of teams that have had multiple different names over the years, we move to the Alpine of Esteban Ocon, Josh. And to be honest with you, it wouldn't have mattered where he'd finished, looking at the points. But was that a decent race for his last race with Fernando?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a definitely decent race, you know, being able to get seventh in the results. Of course, better result than Fernando for sure, with, you know, Fernando did not finish the race, but, you know, Esteban decent final race, closing out the season, closing out his Alpine chapter of his career. But definitely, you know, for Esteban, you know, he's had a victory in his time with Alpine, you know, of course, last year. But, you know, this year, definitely a solid result. And, you know, look forward to, you know, what he's able to produce next year. But, you know, for Fernando, you know, as his teammate, you know, didn't finish the race, which, you know, kind of a boom or bust, you know, up and down year for that, kind of as that team as a whole. But, you know, for Ocon, you know, he definitely had a good result to close out his Alpine career, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's actually, it's kind of, it's good for Ocon. Right. We move on to kind of, This is unfortunately the kind of nothing section of the grid. That's the problem when you finish sort of 8th to a 12th. We've then got Lance Stroll, who won't be worrying about his sneak next year, will he, Philip?
Oh, no. They did such a great job with the strategy the last 2 weeks at Stroll F1 to send off the legendary Sebastian Vettel in great stead, you know, not giving him any soft tires at the end of the Brazilian Grand Prix, and this year in this race not giving him an opportunity to get a second pit stop, and he gets passed by the owner's son. Good for him. You know, he got points. The reality of the world is they still somehow or another figured out a way to not pass Alfa Romeo, who, if you really look at the standings this year, Alfa Romeo stopped basically scoring points prior to the summer break, and Aston Martin didn't really start scoring points till after the summer break, essentially, which is why that it was this close. But when you consider funding and budgeting, Aston Martin should have been able to beat Alfa Sauber, honestly, in the constructors, but they couldn't do it. So, hey, but at least Lance got an eighth place, so whatever it's worth to him, I guess.
Yeah, Alfa Romeo Braun GPing their way to a seventh place in the constructors, I think. Is it seventh? No, it's sixth. I'm an idiot. gosh, this is going to be a bit of a mess, this one. We move to Daniel Ricciardo, Sophia. What can be said about Daniel Ricciardo that hasn't already been said? I don't remember what happened to him in the race. I don't think he did much.
I mean, he battled with Vettel towards the end. That's probably the only thing I kind of remember of it. And then pretty much post-race, apparently he did donuts and Sky never recorded it or like shown it. Same with Mick as well. Mick was doing donuts, but nobody was caring about it. He had a lot to say afterwards about where his future is going to be. He says it's a more likely situation to go with Red Bull, but then also he's not going for all the races as well. But for this race, he was very quiet. The only time you really saw him was when he was battling with Vettel for the last two laps to see who was going to finish above each other and how that was going to affect Seb's last race. But that's pretty much it that I remember seeing from Daniel, which is really sad to see, given it is potentially his last race ever in F1 as well.
Yeah, he has to move to the kind of, I always feel like it's the bridesmaid, never the bride role in F1 that is being a reserve driver. It just looks like the kind of that kind of role that you don't want, but you take just in case. Like, you know, hopefully you'll be a Coulthard, but it's more likely that you'll be an Anthony Davidson.
Even reserve as well. I think they said third driver, so like only doing media and like testing, but like not getting into the free practices, not if somebody is sick, kind of he would step up. It's more like publicity more than anything else, from what I've seen and what I've heard, which again is even sadder as well for Daniel, but very weird.
So it's more like a post career David Coulthard role rather than a Williams career David Coulthard role. That is unfortunate. We move down to Yuki Tsunoda in sort of moving from one Red Bull B team to another. Yuki Tsunoda, I don't remember whether he's safe next year for his seat. Oh, he is? Oh,
he is.
That's a shame. That's ruined my my lead into him, where they're saying, you know, is this result good enough for him to keep his seat, Josh? But I think I'll just have to move to, is this result good enough for Yuki Tsunoda?
Well, I think it's certainly, it could be good enough for him, but being 12th, last car on the lead lap in this race, but I think Yuki probably deserves better going into next year, and certainly, you know, could have been a better result. Lost out in the points to Sebastian, but I think for Yuki, 17th in the standings right now, so pretty mediocre year for him. But compared to the results that his teammate this year, Pierre Gasly, was able to put up, but. I think we'll have to find out next year if he's able to continue to be a good driver for the B team of Red Bull, essentially with AlphaTauri there. But I think definitely next year Yuki he has a chance to kind of be that number one driver for AlphaTauri. But we'll have to see if he's able to put up the results and if they even have the pace compared to Red Bull.
Exactly. I mean, it's the kind of the curse of the Red Bull B team is maybe not having having the resources, but not having the necessarily the pace to compete with the Red Bull A team. Now we move to, we mentioned it slightly earlier, but we move to the team that has, as I say, has really kind of nickel and dimed their way, I would say, to beating Aston Martin. And, that they are the highest in the championship,
non-factory.
Highest in the sort of midfield, I guess, is what I'd call them. And to be fair, beating Aston Martin that has a lot more funding than them is pretty good. But we have Guanyu Zhou. How did his race go today, Phil?
It's typical of his season, really. Generally uneventful, quiet. Nothing too spectacular, nothing crazy. Yeah, there were some days where it kind of went sideways for him. Of course, whatever, British Grand Prix, but considering what happened to his teammate today, I think Zhou can leave happy with a clean car, and had some battles and was out there and learned a lot this year. And people question the validity of him being up there in Formula One because of the money that he brings to the table and whatever, all these other things. But honestly, for what he's shown previously, where he's at now, the kind of stability that he's able to bring to Sauber Alpha as they're transitioning to Audi here in a few years' time, is a good thing. We'll see what he does next year. Now, you've had 1 year. Let's see how you prepare, how you come back for the second year. We'll see what Alpha Sauber can do with their car. Bottas is a great tester, and he understands how to make those changes. So, nice enough day. They were able to somehow or another hold off Aston Martin, they'll need every single penny in that to go and utilize for next year within their budget cap. But they finished, so that's better than a lot of races where they had mechanicals or other issues. So that in itself is a bonus.
Yeah, definitely. The Ferrari power unit not exactly being rock solid. Now we move to Alex Albon, who I found interesting that he put up less of a he got out of the way far more quickly than Gasly did when the leaders were coming through, particularly with Sergio Perez, Sophia. A bit of loyalty to his former team?
Maybe it could also be where it was located as well, because some of the tracks, it's very difficult to give space to let the drivers leading pass. I mean, Alex this season has done tremendously well, given everything that he's been through, obviously fighting medical and health problems mid-season and just outperforming his teammate. I mean, it's not that hard to do, but outperforming his teammate this season, coming back into F1 in his first year back after taking some time out. But it was a good race for him, obviously outside the points. But Williams, I hate to say this, Williams surprised me this season a bit. I was expecting it to be like how it was with Haas last season, pretty much barely any points. But obviously we've had a few points with Nick stepping in, and then Alex, and then obviously Latifi getting points finally as well. But he just did well for this season, and especially with this race, it was a very quiet race for him compared to his teammate, who had a spin in a few other incidences in this race. But it was a good one for him. It's going to be interesting the new season again. I'm going to keep on saying this new season now, because we finish the season. I'm already looking forward to, it's 105 days until F1 starts back up again in March. But it's going to be interesting with the rookie of Logan coming in as well, to see what he will do to lead the team. Because obviously he was not the leader this season, given that Latifi's been with the team for 3 years and Alex it's his first year. But I'm expecting bigger things for Williams. I'm expecting more points for both of the drivers. I mean, hopefully, I would say maybe a podium. It's possible. We saw that with George. Anything could happen in a Williams by the sounds of it. And how great they are in the wets and the straights as well will be very crucial with some of these races, especially the sprint races that are going to be taking place as well.
Yeah, there are definitely some positives at Williams. They do have, I think, probably quite a lot solid driver lineup. And there's some positives in the car, but unfortunately they are in a class of one. And that is not a place that you want to be when that class of one is something like 27 points, I think, off the next team in the constructors. It is another last place finish for Williams, which is not what they're going to be wanting. Now we move to Pierre Gasly. Started on the softs. Did that ruin his race, Josh? From the very beginning. I mean, I think it's a kind of a achievement to get up to where he is. But could they have done better if they'd just gone traditional on the strategy?
Yeah, I think he could have gone traditional on strategy and started out not on the softs, because I don't think it worked for them. Because early on in the race they were already far behind in the back in 17th, but didn't really move any further than that, and finished the race off the lead lap. Didn't really have any pace throughout, and surprisingly, Yuki Tsunoda actually had a better race than his teammate and finished ahead of them. And then I guess it afforded the ability for AlphaTauri to be able to double stack with both Pierre and Yuki. But Pierre Gasly, kind of a underwhelming result for the final race for him, finally kind of leaving the Red Bull paradigm, going between Toro Rosso formerly and going to Red Bull, and then now AlphaTauri, and then now next year going to Alpine. So might be a different strategy, or different experience there. We'll see if he's able to perform any better than what he's done with AlphaTauri. But this race here definitely did not have a lot of pace, and going on the softs, probably I guess the thinking is there, you can advance your position, but didn't really have anything to be able to do that, and then couldn't get a good result. So Pierre could have been on that strategy, on the normal strategy, but different strategies for that team. So couldn't have a better finish, but maybe they could have if he had stayed on the normal tire strategy.
Yeah, just not great for them, unfortunately, from their decisions. Yeah, it just didn't work out. I mean, it should have been obvious when apparently there was 11 laps of tire life on the softs, and they picked those to go with. I think that's putting them towards a three stop, which definitely wasn't the way to go. Now we have Valtteri Bottas in 15th place, gained 3 places from 18th. Is the only value that he really gave to the race visual, in that the Alfa Romeo looks quite nice under the lights.
Yeah, that's it. Other than his great mustache, his ode to the past, whether you want to say it's Nigel Mansell or KK Rosberg, that his stash game is on point. I guess the new his new partner girlfriend really likes it. Alfa Romeo, it must bring the Ted Lasso vibes and bring lots of positivity to their team. And it definitely affected downforce numbers, I think, and traction and other things that probably would have helped with their ability to be somewhere near the front. Screwed me up in my F1 fantasy because I kind of went and made my adjustments looking at the pace that they had on Friday, and that pace never came to fruition on Saturday or Sunday. So, I'll give credit to Valtteri. Now he seems a lot more free and looser and growing out a stash and getting used to his... He's getting ready to be a World Rally driver, I think, here in a few years' time. Once he gets out of Formula One, he's starting to get this... the Juha Kankinen look to him. So credit to Valtteri on that. Since he's going to be running with Mika Hakkinen in the Race of Champions, I think. So that'll be cool to see.
Yeah, slightly poor name, unfortunately, for Valtteri Bottas. He never did achieve that championship. right, so now we move to Mick Schumacher, who, all things considered, I'd say, Sophia, had a blinder of a race, finished in front of Latifi, even with a 5-second penalty, and his teammate.
Yeah, I was just looking at the race results. I didn't realize that Kevin finished so low. I don't know what happened there, but I mean, obviously Latifi retired, so makes sense. But I mean, he wasn't that far off. It wasn't obviously his highest this season because he's been in the points, but I mean, it's been more of his consistent like level this season. The incident with Latifi, that was such a bad mistake for Mick. I 100% say it's his fault over Latifi's. He should have just watched where he was going. I'm gonna be upset not seeing Mick on the track next season. Apparently rumors is that he's taking Mercedes's reserve driver, but again, that's another rumor of the many. So the season's not over yet, even with the season being over. It's just going to keep on going this entire season. But overall, his season, better than last season, did well, minus the incident with Latifi in the second. He produced some good racing, some good overtaking a few times as well, some good battling with the lower teams. But other than that, like, it just wasn't as memorable compared to some of the other drivers for today's race.
Yeah, and speaking of sort of not being memorable, we have Kevin Magnussen, Josh, who I don't think I ever really saw on the TV coverage. I don't know what kind of happened to him. He started in 16th and ended up in 17th. I think that kind of sums up his race, does it not?
Yeah, I think it kind of sums up his race, and I feel like it really just sums up Haas F1 in general as a team. You know, they don't really have any pace, and you know, a week ago he was on pole, and now finishing 17th here in Abu Dhabi, and kind of coming back to earth, I guess, you know, after being on the highlights and everything a week ago in Brazil. But started out on the hards to, you know, begin the race, and then went onto the mediums. So, you know, they did have a one-stop strategy, but didn't really get anything and ended up having a net loss of minus one. Of course, like you said, 16th and, you know, finishing in 17th there. But you know, not a really great race overall for K-Mags, and definitely going to, you know, continue to be the lead guy next year at Haas. You know, we'll see if they're able to make any gains next year, and if you know, they have any pace. But yeah, I don't think I saw him on the TV either throughout the race. You know, really a slow race overall, I think, for Haas. And the only highlight you saw there was from his teammate, of course, which we just talked about. But yeah, nothing really memorable about this race for K-Mag for sure.
Yeah, luckily he's not fighting for a seat, so it doesn't really matter. Right, now we move to the section of the finishers where most of the world championships are kind of congregated. We go to Lewis Hamilton, who is, you know, it was a tough day for him, Phil. You know, obviously he started well, was going well, and then kind of everything just kind of fell apart through the race.
Yeah, I mean, he had a mirror image of lap one of last year's race, then ran over the sausage curb, then who knows if he had power unit issues or something going on, electrical issues. Then they decided to run him long and only did a one stop, which was also a mistake. I mean, hydraulic, yeah, that makes, thank you, Sophia. I figure it makes sense, you know, have that hydraulic issue that was led to the DNF, first DNF for the main Mercedes team this year. And it comes at a time where Sir Lewis Hamilton will go without either a pole or a win for the first time in his career. So, I mean, it's considering to go, whatever, 14 years and win at least one race and one pole is an outstanding statistic. That's things that, like, here in the States, thinking about some of the people in NASCAR and IndyCar being able to have long streaks of winning one race like that or winning a pole like that, that's something you keep track of. And to be that prolific, this year was definitely a throwaway year. He was beat by George for a good part of the season. After the summer break, really, Lewis was better. Of course, it'll show that, you know, George did do what he did last week at Brazil, and he beat Lewis heads up. So credit to George. He did a great job. He is the future of Mercedes, but Lewis isn't going away. And he's going to come back, and he has a lot of energy and a lot of positive vibes going on and all the different 8 trillion entities that he seems to have. So he'll be back, and he's in the W14, I would venture to say, has to be better, because good God, this car was garbage. So he'll, you know, if you want to keep him around, he's going to be 38 next year. So I mean, if you're like Fred Alonso, who's going to race until he's 900, maybe he's got a few more years. But I think for reality, I think Lewis probably's got about 2, maybe 3 years left. I think he wants to win one more title. I think it's possible for him to win one more title. Even with Red Bull's advantages, mainly because, you know, I think he's just a better, he's a more intelligent and a better driver than the guy that is the current world champion. So the reality of the world is it should count for something if it comes down to it over the course of a season. But you need all the pieces in place to win in Formula One. And we'll see what happens with that. Unfortunate end to a very tough season for Sir Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, I think it's I just want to make the point that, you know, I think you brushed on it. This is the first mechanical retirement for Mercedes that we can point to, and was a case of things just breaking down. I can't believe we're saying that 22 races into a season. I think that's, you know, it's almost a testament to how good Mercedes could have been had the car been faster. Obviously, they needed to go through that learning experience, and mid-season development got put on hold. But I think that they'll come back stronger for it. The 2022 car, 2023 car, should be should you know, not have those issues. And I think Mercedes, with the reliability that was unmatched, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Only going out through crash damage on every other occasion is impressive. It's not so impressive. Nicholas Latifi, he makes up kind of the last of the, he makes up the last of the runners, apart from Fernando Alonso, the last of the classified runners is Latifi, which is actually kind of surprising in some ways. Not a great race for him. Funnily enough, though, his only issue was the fact that he got hit someone else.
Didn't finish last, I guess that's some achievement, I guess, for him. I'm getting all the drivers that are leaving this on this podcast today. I mean, minus the incident with Mick, which again was not his fault at all. I don't remember anything else from Latifi. I don't even know when he retired. I know it was like probably mid-race, but I don't know when exactly. It was definitely after Alonso, but obviously before Hamilton. But weirdly enough, yeah, wasn't as memorable. It'll be interesting to see where he goes. I don't see him getting a seat pretty much anywhere, maybe, in the nice way as possible. But yeah, he got points. He finally finished the season with points, helped Williams get some points as well. With the Constructors' Championship, didn't finish last out of the 24 drivers of the season, out of the 20 classified. But other than that, yeah, just a very quiet race for him for his last race.
Yeah, Latifi, the only time Latifi got on the TV was when he was being hit by someone and didn't even get to retire.
It was a perfect one as well. That was so in sync.
Oh yeah, synchronized spinning. Maybe he's got a career with Ken Block, doing, I don't know what it would be, Crash Karna, probably. I don't think
Audi wants to pay for him to go in crash cars though. Like you'd have to pay Audi first.
He might be doing that in IndyCar next year. We'll see.
You never know. At least the cars are a bit closer to in sort of philosophy now. They might not be so much of a jump. We have Fernando Alonso now, just bringing up the kind of almost the last of the classified runners. Not classified, kind of, you know, I think it's almost indicative of his time at Alpine, is it not, Josh?
Yeah, I think it's very indicative of, you know, his time there. Very, you know, throughout his time at Alpine, you know, he's had some good results, a lot of, you know, things that he did well, but at the same time, there has been a lot of bad results. And I think you can point to kind of the issues that he's had this year throughout the season. You know, this is his fifth DNF this year in Formula, actually his sixth, sorry, but, you know, he's had a lot of issues with the engine so far this year. And, you know, this one, the latest one, a water leak in the car. So, yeah, disappointing result for Fernando. You know, he had a good start to the race, you know, for him starting out in 10th and, you know, made his way all the way up to the top five before the pit stops. And then, you know, was on the hards and then had the issue with the water leak and had to retire from the race. So yeah, kind of a disappointing end for his time at Alpine. You know, throughout this year, you know, he's had some opportunities and then, you know, throughout it, he had a lot of disappointments and, you know, just the latest of the disappointing results here. And now he's continuing to be the oldest driver in Formula One, currently active. And, you know, for him, I guess we'll find out next year, you know, what he's able to do, but, you know, he just had a, you know, another disappointing result. And, you know, Phil said he's going to be, you know, driving Formula One until he's 900. Well, be interesting to see what, you know, how he complains and when he's an old man on the grid and, you know, talking about things like, oh, you have to leave a space on the track. We'll see how they do as he's, you know, the oldest guy. But yeah, definitely a disappointing result for sure.
Yeah.
Good luck explaining that to Lawrence Stroll.
Oh, you know what? I think Lawrence Stroll has probably met his match with Fernando Alonso and Flavio Briatore. I can't wait to see the kind of things that go down should things go wrong at Aston Martin next year. Right, now, speaking of Aston Martin, the eagle-eared among you might have noticed that we skipped Sebastian Vettel in 10th place. That's definitely not me forgetting that he was there. That is us leaving a special space for, I think, people might not have agreed maybe 10 years ago, but one of the most loved drivers on the grid, absolutely brilliant to see the guard of honor at the start of the race. You know, what what can be said about Sebastian Vettel that hasn't already been said? He's going to go down as one of the all-time greats with four world championships for Red Bull, brought them their first world championships, and really, you know, despite some issues here and there with driver management, he's really come along strong, driven for four very, very successful teams, and the only teams that he's not got a win for is Aston Martin, unfortunately. Philip, what's Sebastian Vettel's legacy this year?
Well, this year, I mean, he did what he had to do. They had a terrible car to start the year, and he kind of persevered, but he also started having those feelings about, you know, I think this is probably the time that I should stop, because I don't think it's really going to get much better here at this team, and the opportunities that may have been out there initially when he signed weren't there. He has his other interests, of course, his wife and his children, and with environmentals and all he's a very, it was something watching the interview he had on Friday, and I was very emotional about that. And I'm like, man, this guy is just really, he's just an awesome guy. And when he was at Red Bull, it's true what you said, Owain, that not so sure he could have said that. Some of the aggro he had with Mark Webber and the similar kind of stuff with two of those people that are still there, you know, promoting their current guy. But, you know, the notion is he's become a statesman. He's become somebody who's represented this sport the right way. He's driven for a team that what is AlphaTauri now, was once Minardi, got him their first win. He gets Red Bull their first win. He gets Red Bull their first championships. He goes to Ferrari and is able to win and get them in the position to possibly win championships, trying to follow in the footsteps of his hero and his friend, and the great Michael Schumacher. He's third all-time in wins. I'm not sure where he's at on poles all-time. It's pretty high up there, too. And feel like second, it seems like the right number. Maybe second, third, fourth, somewhere around there. But, you know, he was at his prime, was unbeatable. And I was reading an old story in Racer magazine from years ago after his fourth world championship in a row, and how he drove the car, and how he drove the car was so much different than Mark Webber. And because of that, you could see the differences. It's ironic considering where we are at now, 9 years later. There's so many similarities, but he's a gentleman, he's a racer, he's loved, and he's made every team that he went to better. And you know, you could just see it, you know, the way Lewis and Sebastian get along and their relationship they have. The fact that Fernando Alonso has a friend in the Formula One grid is amazing to me, with his enormous ego and his short stature. You know, and then you have all these other people out there just to love. You know, Mick looks at him, and in a lot of ways, he's not only a big brother, he's more than that to him. So it's a huge loss for the grid. And I don't know if he's going to race again. I hope he does, because he's too talented of a driver to stop. You know, I think he could really help somebody in WEC. He could help somebody in some other form of racing, but we'll see what happens. But, you know, danke, Seb. Thank you so much for everything you've brought to Formula One racing, your jokes and quips and some of the stuff you do in those press conferences definitely will be missed.
Yeah, you know, I think everyone's been young and dumb, and I think Sebastian would be the first to admit that he was, but he's now become a sort of real shepherd of the sport in multiple different ways, and I think helped guide it maybe to a better direction than it was before, Sophia.
Yeah, oh, it's been such an emotional weekend. Like, even now, just thinking about how much he's done for the sport, both on track and outside of the track as well, all his philanthropy that he's done over the years. Like we mentioned, like, obviously he wasn't the most liked sometimes throughout his season, but he has produced some great races, some great wins. I believe his last podium was Baku last year, if I'm corrected. I know he's had one pass in Martin, but I want to say that is his last. But how this weekend's been, like all the media clips, all the drivers coming together, it's just been so heartfelt for it. And he says he's over, but I mean, I can see him taking a role within F1 at some capacity. Obviously, maybe not a driver, but in some other kind of way. We'll see how it goes. But he's one of the drivers that I first started following when I got into F1 as well. So to kind of have it as the end of the era is quite a interesting one. And it'll be interesting to see what he does outside of the season as well from it.
Yeah, and Josh, do you have anything to say about Sebastian Vettel? I'm sure you do.
Well, I mean, I think the question is because, you know, he's only 35 years old, and a lot of people talk about, you know, does he have anything left in him as a racer? Will he return back to Formula One and like in a few years? And it's crazy to think because he's only 35 and Lewis is a couple of years older than him. And Fernando Alonso, of course, is in his 40s and still racing. Could this be a break kind of similar to what Alonso had, you know, in 2018 to 2019 when he was off the grid and then coming back in 2020? We'll have to see. But yeah, I feel like for Vettel, I don't think he'll actually come back. I think this might be it for him in Formula One as a racer. Maybe not. Maybe he might race in other series later on or do something, have some kind of involvement. But yeah, I think I kind of started to see him in 2020, I guess, be not as, you know, passionate about Formula One. And you can kind of see with the results he was getting that year with Ferrari and then kind of a last hurrah, I guess, or gasp in racing for Aston Martin the last couple of years, but not really good results there, of course, like you said, in 2021, having a second at Baku, but nothing really memorable overall about his last 2 years. But, you know, still a solid driver throughout his career, solid career and a great career, actually, you know, having four championships in a row. But yeah, definitely a huge loss and somebody, you know, that I think a lot of people like overall in his career. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what his future is and, you know, what his involvement is post F1.
Yeah, I think we're kind of on the knife edge of we might be saying goodbye, but we also might be saying farewell. It's also insane to me that we're talking about someone who's 35 years old and going, they can still come back. They've still got things to do. Like, you know, that is the life of the modern Formula One driver. And I think just the high intensity nature of Formula One doesn't quite suit Seb, which, yeah, I think he has to be respected for sitting down and going, you know what? No. Or standing up, sorry, and going, no, I can't. I won't quite do this. I'll wrap up with my head held high. Yeah. And you know, kind of, I wouldn't say leave the sport, but head away for a little bit. Now, that wraps us up. That is the last of the traditional coverage for the 2022 Grand Prix season. It's been a bit of a monster, really. And it's only going to get worse as we move to two races every weekend. A race every 2 weeks as we're moving towards as Formula One marches onwards. But we will be back next year. We will, of course, have a season review and various things over the winter, but those are yet to be decided. Beyond that, I would love to give our lovely guests you know, just an opportunity to promo. So I will be going with Sophia first for Everything F1.
Yeah, so you can find us on www.everythingf1.com. We have articles not just of F1, but also F2 and F3, W Series, IndyCar. We're also on all social media platforms at Join EF1. We also do a podcast weekly that is streamed live on Facebook on Tuesdays. And then obviously available on all streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, and such. Great guests we've had so far. We've had some XF1 drivers. We got Sean Kelly this week, I believe, as well. If you want to give a listen and subscribe.
Awesome. And we always get to the little bit awkward awkward situation when we have two people from the same organization. Philip or Josh, where would you like to go? Okay, right. Right, Philip, we'll head to you.
Yeah, we can listen to myself and Josh on the Gripstrip podcast. We'll be on tomorrow to do episode 144, 145. Yeah, 145. And it'll be out during this week. It's a short week, of course, with Thanksgiving here in the United States. So, and not a lot of racing left. But we'll talk about Formula One, the race and the end of the season, Sebastian, the end of Sebastian's legendary career. We'll get into other motorsports. I think Extreme E will be back on this week, so we'll, their season finale will be on, so we'll go and preview that. We'll talk about NFL, we'll talk about F2, yeah, there you go. World Touring Cars as well. Randomly, we'll talk about World Touring Car Racing this week, since that's all that's out there. You can find me at Philip G. Matthew on Twitter. You can find us at Gripstrip Pod on Twitter. We're on YouTube. Josh handles the YouTube side of things, so you can watch your Gripstrip Pod on YouTube as well. You can also find it. You can find it on anywhere where there are podcasts. You get podcasts, you can find Gripstrip Podcast. You can find us also at philipgmatthew.com.
Excellent. Right. If you want to hear, actually, no, I don't think, you know what? I'm not going to plug my Twitter account because it's going to be around for 4 seconds after I do. And I won't have made a tweet by then, as Elon Musk finds his way to lose $44 billion in about 21 days. Now, Grid Talk is available on YouTube, where most episodes, including this one, are recorded live, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Omni Studio, and Pocket Casts. Just search Formula One Grid Talk for our back catalogue of shows with previews and reactions to qualifying and the race results. Please consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get mics, lights, and better recording equipment. And you can get your hands on some official Grid Talk merchandise at f1chronicle.com/store. Make sure you subscribe to when you're the first to know about each weekly episode and when it's released. We will be back soon with plenty more F1 content. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.